Season 4, Episode 13, Tom and Jerry.
You see what they did there?
I do see what they did there. Jerry is spelt differently because of the character Jerry from NYPD Blue. This episode opens up as a direct second part to what happened at the end of the last episode, Upstairs, Downstairs, where Simone and Russell are intertwined on either a bed or a big chair. Simone is awake, and Russell wakes up, and it appears they held each other all night.
Real quick. So, the episode before was called Upstairs, Downstairs?
Yes.
Okay, and that was in reference to the upstairs squad getting in a beef with the downstairs squad?
Yes.
But maybe it's also in reference to Russell being all fucked up mentally in her brain, her upstairs, and Simone being all fucked up in his downstairs area, because he ain't getting to lay that poom, you know what I mean?
That's exactly what I think they were doing, with the upstairs, downstairs. It's a double metaphor.
That's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
What's problematic about this opening, at least in my opinion, is that Russell wakes up. She seems to be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, ready to attack the day after having a mental breakdown most of yesterday.
Kirk, she just told the man that she loves that her dad raped her multiple times.
And
she wakes up and is like, horny. Like, and I don't mean that to be funny either. She wakes up and they have like a passionate makeout scene.
Because I wrote that down too.
And she's like, she is like ready. It is so weird.
Okay, because let's talk about the sequence. Because it's the opening is absolutely insane. So she wakes up.
I don't even remember what she says to him.
I
just remember her going, like, waking up with a huge smile on her face and then, like, just taking it to Bone Town.
Okay, she says, this is a quote from her. She says, "You got me through. Now I know what it was." There was mention, there's mention in the last episode that she's like, "I don't know what's going on with me. It's just hard to handle." So she's like, "I know what it was. I figured it out." So she says that. She then apologizes, basically saying, "You waited way too long." Simone says, "I'm just glad I could help you." When Mary died, he brings up his dead wife, and he says, "When Mary died, there was nothing I could do to help her." And no, it's so weird. She says, "You don't deserve what I did to you," and he says, "No one deserves a lot of what happens. No one deserves a lot about what happens. No one deserves a lot that happens." Doesn't matter what the quote is. The point is, he mentions his dead wife. He says, "I'm just glad I could help you." And then they look at each other and start making out. Like, what?
Yeah.
What world is this?
This is the world where your daddy raped you and you just gotta move on.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's absolutely
like,
crazy.
Like, literally, like, hey, you had a good cry over it and you were up all night. You figured it out, and let's go.
That was the end of the opening of this episode. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where two brothers, me being Kirk, the other voice being Kyle, go through every single episode of NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. Anyway, we come back from the break, and Sipowicz...
These are the breaks. Sorry.
Sipowicz is coming into work, and he gets stopped by Jerry. And if you don't remember Jerry, she's the old PAA that everybody likes to mention that she's fat, ugly, and they should be so happy that they now have Gina instead of her. It's also the woman that was removed from that position because she kept coming on to Sipowicz by talking about fetish wear and odd
shit.
She
likes rubber. She likes rubber.
She comes in and
she wants to rub all over. She wants to rub up on Sipowicz with some rubber.
She goes to Andy and she says, "I need to talk to you." He responds with, "You'll get over it."
He's got good comebacks.
This episode is full of things I'm going to start using in my daily life in terms of phrases. And there's a bunch of quotes. I wrote down a bunch of shit. He says he's heard all he's listening to about body juices and rubber corsets. And she says, "Look, I found a dead guy, one of my friends. He's dead in his apartment."
Hey, look, I found a dead guy.
Look, hey, I found someone dead.
Hey, I found this dead guy, and I just want to let you know.
She gets cut off because Fancy gives Sipowicz a construction site homicide that him, Simone, Martinez, and Medavoy are going to go on. And then Fancy says, no, you'll be talking to Kirkendall and Russell. And Jerry turns into a real bitch about it. She becomes very short and very passive-aggressive.
Yeah, as fast as Kirkendall, as fast as Russell gets over her trauma, Jerry turns into a bitch.
Like, a GD bitch. She's unreal. Because she gets really pissy where she's like, this is gonna be a real day at the beach.
And it's like, bitch, you came in.
Yeah, and she says, you're going to have fun. Well, that's...
And you can't get mad that Fancy doesn't want to put you with fucking Sipowicz. Sipowicz has said that he feels uncomfortable with you. And so Fancy's not going to put his best detective in an uncomfortable situation and piss him off.
And also, like, she doesn't really... She's not forthcoming with why she doesn't want to talk to the women, which...
Yeah, like... Yeah. But she's also not forthcoming with anything.
No, nothing at all.
She shows up with this statement, hey, I found a dead guy. And then when everyone wants to ask her questions and, like, get a little bit more involved, she's like, no, I don't want to talk about it.
No, thank you.
Unless it's Sipowicz, I'm not talking. And you can take that to the bank.
She has her reasons, which we'll get into, but she doesn't go about this the right way. We can all agree to that.
She jerries it. Poison reference.
So Sipowicz, Simone, Martinez, and Medavoy go to a construction site where there was a Donnybrook that took place. Another thing I'm going to start using all the time, Donnybrook. When they get there...
You should use it, because then people are going to be like, hey, oh, are you a fan of the LA-based hardcore band, Donnybrook?
I'm not even joking. After this episode, I do remember the band Donnybrook, and I looked for their albums. It's not on iTunes. They only have an EP, and it's garbage. It's recorded terribly.
I think I have one of their albums.
You did. I remember listening to it.
Yeah, they weren't good.
But
going back listening to a lot of hardcore, you realize a lot of it wasn't good.
What are you talking about, Kyle? Terror still got it.
Terror was not someone I put on that list. Terror is not someone I put on that list. Not at all. I think Terror is fantastic today and every day.
Sipowicz, Martinez, Medavoy, and Simone go to this construction site. And when Sipowicz steps out of the car, he says another phrase I'm going to be using in my daily life. Freeze a furry tit, and I'm out here with one glove on. Freeze a furry tit.
And why does he have one glove on? Because Theo likes sleeping with his other glove or something?
Yeah, Theo likes sleeping on the glove. Simone and Sipowicz have a conversation about Russell, and Bobby's like, I'm optimistic about Russell. She's got things, and she got them off her chest. And it's like, you should be talking about how
she just got that rape off her chest, dude. Just like, it off.
He says, I'm optimistic.
All that this story, real quick, all that this story is missing, a Russell story, is, like, she had, like, a miscarriage from, like, her dad's, like, she got pregnant by him. That's what the story's missing.
That's missing? That would make it a perfect cake
like,
for
just
you.
Just like how, like, in-depth and, like, deep it, like, goes. Like, it's just missing, like, a random pregnancy.
It's also kind of annoying that he's like, look, I'm optimistic. Sure, she's not with a professional right now or in a hospital or, like, talking this out with somebody. She's just at work and we only found out about it yesterday. But I'm optimistic. Which is like...
Yeah, I'm optimistic.
You shouldn't
she's
be.
She's at work. With her gun. And she just found out all this, like, horrible fucked up shit and is going through, like, a mental change and is like, I'm optimistic that she's, like, hanging around with her gun. She was sitting, less than 24 hours ago, I found her in a pile of snot and tears and emotion. And, oh yeah, her dad raped her. But, you know, it's cool because she's now around a bunch of, like, people who have a bunch of testosterone and guns.
She also said that she's having such a severe anxiety attack, it seems like reality itself isn't easy to understand.
And yeah, I don't even know what that means. I'm too stupid to understand, like, that.
Because she's
he's all like, oh, fuck it, cool, whatever, dude. Whatever, bro.
No, she figured it out, and now she's back at work. Look, some coffee and donuts, it'll be cleared up.
Look, she got a bit of that Simone dick, cleared her right up, got it off her chest, and we're moving on.
Oh, man. Okay, so this episode.
Kirk, she woke up ready to fuck.
How weird.
That's not, like, there's no way.
It's insane.
It's maddening.
To quote, to use another quote from this episode to describe it that I'll be using constantly, oh, this is just flabbergasting. They go to this construction site. What happened is two different coalitions, which I guess are groups that try to get jobs for guys at construction sites and at...
By coalitions, do they mean unions?
I was confused about that. Like, I don't know... Because to be perfectly honest, I don't understand... I understand what their purpose is, but I also don't really get how they work, like how they make a lot of money.
So this is what I thought it was. I thought it was a bunch. So I thought like one union was a bunch of it was the African American like construction workers.
Yeah.
who are in a union, but they are a part of this coalition that is just them, like African American men.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is these people go around and try to get.
Jobs for
these African American union construction workers. And then the same thing is with this Puerto Rican group. And there are some people who are in charge of it. So what they do is they're like, hey, pay us a little bit of money and be a part of this group and we'll get you jobs and then can get you paid. And so like they work off of donations and shit. That's what I assumed it was.
It's one of those things where I understand the purpose. I just don't understand how one of these characters, specifically, I think it's Fernandez. He's like really he's got a real big like flexing with. Well, I don't want to use that word. I'm not fucking young anymore. He's really brat.
He's big dick swinging, Kirk.
He's got that big dick energy.
He's got that BDE, bro.
He's
big dick swang.
He's.
He even says something where he's like, are you mad because I make six figures and don't have a high school diploma?
Yeah, he's bragging about his money, but I'm like, how do you get this money? Like, how do you... Because it seems like...
Yeah, it's a little iffy.
Because it's a little iffy. It seems like extortion if you make this much money off of dudes that are just trying to get jobs. Like, how does that happen? But it's not that important. Basically, these two different groups showed up to get... jobs at the same place, and then they started fighting. The rundown is there's one DOA, there's four in the hospital, the rest are cuffed, and there was six guns, an array of bats, pipes, and hammers. And the DOA...
People got wild.
The DOA is Emilio Lopez, who was second in command of the group Bronx United, which is the Puerto Rican group. And he had a bulletproof vest on, which means he anticipated some shit. The reason I'm going to start using Donnybrook is because the uniform officer running it down says, Donnybrook's like a daily thing with these guys. And I was like, Donnybrook's such an awesome word, I'm going to use it more often.
I mean, it's cool, it's not like an awesome word. Like, chill, bro.
Sipowicz airs his grievance.
How old are you?
Sipowicz airs his grievances with the coalitions, calling them phony hustlers, and when Martinez asks what he means by that, Sipowicz says, well, they're basically demanding jobs that they don't plan to show up for or don't have the skills to do, and Martinez responds with, there's not an honest guy in the bunch, right, Andy? Andy gets pissy again and walks away, and probably the quote of the episode, Metavoice says to Martinez, Andy's missing a glove. Yeah. And Martinez says, yeah, that accounts for his piss-poor attitude, right? Metavoy responds with, that Annie doesn't like most people.
That was a great little scene. but Martinez is wrong. Like, just because there's one good person in the bunch doesn't mean that the bunch is then justified.
Wait, who's right? I'm sorry?
Martinez. I don't think Martinez is right. Just because, like, because he says, oh, there's not one, like... good guy in the whole bunch. I'm like, that doesn't take away from the fact that this coalition isn't legit or is running a scam. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, just because there's a good person in there doesn't mean, which we find out at the end of this episode, that this coalition isn't full of shit. And the person who ends up being, like, the good egg is the person who ends up being harmed the most, you know?
as the investigation goes, they bring in all the guys that were at the site to the house to interview each of them, because they assume someone at least saw what happened. The first guy to speak is a guy named Ray Harvey, who is a famous face. He's played by Cyrus Farmer, who was on The Wire, and I believe other episodes of NYPD Blue.
He is in the later episodes when we get Baldwin.
That's right. And he claims he doesn't know anything. He's willing to help.
Was he in The Wire?
It says he was on, I think, 2 or 3 seasons of The Wire.
I'm going to have to go look back and find that. Okay, moving on.
He says he doesn't know anything. He has to take his sister to the doctor's office. He has a really funny line, because he says, "I have to take my sister to the doctor." He's like, "Well, what if you got a job today?" And he's like, "Then she wouldn't go."
Yeah.
It was pretty honest. He says he could be back by 4, so they allow him to leave. Sipowicz and Simone talk to the foreman, who's really, like, agitated, who airs his grievances about the coalition and how they just fight, and they don't have the skills to do the job, and then if he doesn't allow them, then he won't get his job, like, his work done. And then he, like, reluctantly gives up the fact that he has a tape, but he doesn't want anyone to know that he gave up the tape.
Yeah, that was really weird. Why is he so reluctant? Maybe because of the backlash or something, but... Well,
yeah, he said he'll probably get his head smashed in if he gives it up, even though the tape didn't show anything. Like, the tape proves useless.
No, but isn't Farmer holding a gun?
No, what they see on the tape is that they see Bluestone, who is the head of None Forgotten, which is the Black Coalition.
The Black Coalition.
They see him without a gun. So they're like, okay, so it's not him. But then they see the other guy, Harvey, near the shot, but it doesn't seem like he's doing anything. So all they know is that this Bluestone guy definitely didn't do it. That's, like, the only thing they got off the tape. But he's close to the scene, so they're like, well, maybe we can ask him if he saw something.
But Harvey is the one that they kind of... Well, this video kind of helps them raise their suspicions on Harvey a little.
Yeah, because they see him in the video. But that's basically it. They're like, oh, isn't that Harvey? After they talk to him, a woman is screaming in the squad, and it turns out to be Emilio's wife, who's hysterical. This is also where we meet Joe...
She goes from 0 to 1,000 real quick, too.
This is also where we meet Joe Fernandez, who's, like, talking a bunch. I don't know, acting like a big shot, telling her to let it out, and he's, like, basically walking wherever he wants to.
And Martinez is short with him, too. Martinez doesn't let him, like, run his, like, smooth-talking shit either, you know?
Yeah, he's immediately suspicious, which he should be. And he's the head of Bronx United. And as the wife talks more about him, and it's clear that she's, like, devastated and he had kids, and she's yelling about how he's such an honest guy and a decent dude, Simone kind of looks... This is the CSI moment of this episode, where if Sipowicz could put on sunglasses and The Who would start crying. Because... Simone says, so maybe a decent guy got through the net into one of these groups, huh, Andy? And Andy says, yeah, and maybe it got him killed. And then it would just be sunglasses, The Who, NYPD Blue.
Yeah! Wow. Oh, man.
Martinez and Medavoy talk to Fernandez, who makes a comment about they expect him to sit in coffee cake with a $1,200 suit.
That scene made me annoyed. That scene made me want to just, like, have someone punch him.
Because he does a really good job as an actor, because he's a complete asshole. He says Emilio was...
All it made me think of was Joe Bluth. You're really gonna have the guy in the $7,000 suit sit in the chair? Oh, come on!
Oh my gosh. Now I'm just gonna imagine... Now I'm just gonna imagine, because that's Will Arnett, right? That's Joe Bluth.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Now I'm just gonna imagine Will Arnett doing this.
This guy's kind of tall and lanky, like Will Arnett too.
Oh, he's the Spanish Will Arnett. He's the Spanish Joe Bluth.
He's the Spanish George Bluth. He's Jorge Bluth.
Oh my gosh, it was so funny.
No, but yeah, it's so funny
because he basically says, as he's like, well, he was my second in command. I did the business side. He's the one that made the speeches and was preaching on the streets. And Martinez and Medavoy bring up the idea that he was interested in separating the coalition. And he's like, yeah, that's possible. And he's like, well, did that piss you off at all? And he's like, look, we didn't agree on all the same things, but I didn't want to kill the guy, and I wasn't even at the site. And they're clearly not down with his attitude, so then that's when he brings up, you guys are just upset that I make six figures and I don't have a diploma. And
yeah,
they kind of just are like, whatever, get the hell out of here. After that is when they see the video, and it isn't really
much there, yeah.
There isn't much there. But Fancy gives them sister son Ray, who's trying to get out of, like, some misdemeanor, but says she has information on the case.
Yeah. So this is another case where they just happen upon information.
Very conveniently.
You know what I mean? It's just a convenience thing.
She comes in, and this is probably one of the most confusing interviews, I think. And I think it's intentionally confusing, because they use, like, everybody's name, but she's not using their names. And Sipowicz and Simone are asking for clarification by using their real names. And they're saying them so fast that it becomes confusing, even though I know what happened. Because she's saying, oh, here's the deal. Ray Harvey killed Emilio Lopez. Because Ray Harvey ran the lottery with me, I guess. Because she runs numbers and bookkeeping or whatever. Or, I forgot, loan sharking? I don't know exactly what she does. Betting?
Yeah, she's probably a better.
She says Ray Harvey killed Emilio Lopez because Ray Harvey came into a bunch of money and loaned it to Fernandez, who co-runs Bronx United with Lopez. So, he loaned money to Fernandez.
Uh-huh.
Fernandez is
he
not...
He loaned money to the Joe Blue.
Yeah, he loaned money to Bluth. Joe Bluth, Spanish Joe Bluth, Jorge Bluth, he wasn't paying him back. So he got the idea that the reason he's not paying him back is because Emilio is splitting the coalition, which is where Jorge Bluth gets his money.
Yeah.
So he gets the idea, if I kill Lopez, then I'll get my money back. And that's what happened. Even though that dude doesn't owe him the money, it's this other guy, Fernandez. Sipowicz and Simone are upset by this because they're like, there was no reason for this guy to die. They just decided it could be a frame job that they want us to believe he did it because why would he do it this way? But they get frustrated, obviously, with her in the room, and then they get frustrated out on the bench and they take a minute quiet time. But one of the funniest parts was, they said, this is a lot of information you're giving us for getting out of a misdemeanor. And she says, what makes this country go?
No, it's true, though. It's true. Like, they're always doing that shit. Like, why now are they questioning it, you know?
It's true. They eventually talk to Bluestone, because she says, Ray, Harvey, Bluestone, and her were talking about this the day before the shooting. And it was even set up between Fernandez and Bluestone, who are buddies, that they're both going to be at the site. So it seems extremely convenient. They run it by Bluestone, who just basically agrees and says, yep, that's what happened, after they press him with it. And after that, they bring in Ray Harvey, who slowly...
No, Ray Harvey comes in.
Oh, that's right. Ray Harvey shows up himself.
Yeah, that's the thing, is he shows up at 4 on good faith because they let him out. And they have done all of this has happened before he gets back.
And when he gets back, they sit him down and they say, so here's what happened. Is this what you did? And they try to give him every opportunity to pin some of the blame on Bluestone and Sister Ray? Sister Son Ray,
yeah.
And he's like... Well, no, like, they got me drunk and they gave me the idea, but they didn't tell me to do it. And he's like, well, what about the gun? Because Sipowicz has the hilarious line of, you don't want to talk? That translates to, let me bend over and spread them wide. And then, he's like, you've been wrapped up like a Christmas package. You might want to return the favor. Sipowicz says, was it their gun? Because they've set you up like a Christmas package. And even Simone says, are you sure you don't want to lie about that? Like, they're even encouraging him to just lie for the possibility that they get in some kind of trouble over this.
Well, because... Well, no, because you kind of find out that they... Well, I mean, you slowly find out that they set him up, you know?
Yeah, they did a perfect frame job.
And they feel really bad for the guy. What's the second story?
I was just reading over the end of the end of the...
I'm drawing a blank.
The investigation ends with them basically realizing Ray Harvey's going to go down for it. When they come back into the squad, Joe Fernandez is talking a big game about, oh man, when they find out that it was at the hands of a black man, you know. And Sipowicz and Simone strong-arm him into making a trust for Emilio and his family.
Yeah.
Which is pretty rad.
Which is a pretty cool move.
Especially because they're like, yeah, we're going to make you do this and do this. And he's like, it's already in the works. He's like, nope, you're going to do it today with one of our DAs. So it's all legal and binding. And then Sipowicz says, you know what? Take a seat right there. I'm going to get you one of our favorite attorneys, Leo Cohen.
Which I think is the best attorney to get to be annoying.
At one point, he says, look at this guy's speech. He says, look at him speechifying. And then they said, man, you're so funny. You're like Monday Night Wrestling. Oh, man.
When The Rock and Stone Cold were on, Monday Night Wrestling was great.
This was the era for Monday Night Wrestling.
My attitude era, bro.
The other story that's going on, Russell and Kirkendall get Jerry's friend, who was dead in his apartment, hung up in a gimp mask, women's underwear and such.
And such.
When they get in there, there's a weird moment because they're looking over this guy who's hung up on a rack and hung by his neck, and there's a towel around his neck while he's being hung, and Russell says, oh, he was going to go to work today. That's why he put the towel in, so there's no ligature marks. And my question is, how does she know that?
Yeah, is that just like common knowledge?
Because I would have not realized that the second I see him.
Not at all. And they were acting... we don't know about this weird-ass world that they're in, you know?
Yeah, everything was like, oh, this is crazy. This is weird shit. Well, the two women don't seem that... The two women don't seem weirded out by it too much, but the super comes in to confirm who it is. It's Jerry's boyfriend. When she sees him hanging like that, she says, oh, that is just flabbergasting, which I found funny. She says things like, well, I had no inkling that he was up to this. I mean, he doesn't play loud music. He always pays his rent on time. And it's like, okay, well, you know. Doesn't necessarily mean he wouldn't if he did these things.
Yeah, it's really weird.
And
a really weird assumption to make.
She says he's always been a pretty decent dude. And then Russell asks, is there anybody else who has a key? And she says, oh yeah, his girlfriend Jerry. And then describes Jerry.
Everyone's description is like horrible.
Yeah, she calls her like chunky build.
Yeah.
Which I was like, that's not the nicest way to put that. It's also funny how, like,
character... Like, bitch, you're old.
Bitch, you're old.
Bitch, you're old.
That's just like being fat.
A little bit.
It's also funny when a character is giving a description of someone, because this happens on the show, where a character is giving a description and the person already knows who they're talking about, so they just stop writing notes. I always find that interesting because, like, at no point...
That happens a lot in this story.
Yeah, and just, it's so funny how they happen to keep describing and they don't take the hint, like, oh, they're not writing it down. They probably already know who I'm talking about. This, when they see the receipt for the fetish gear, they then go to the sex shop, even making mention, I hope that he's been seen with somebody other than Jerry.
Yeah, it's so fucked up.
And just a weird throwaway line. For some crazy reason, Kirkendall goes, slap me for thinking those boots are cool. Which was her version of killer.
Makes you wonder about Jill.
And Jill's into some of that shit, man. What's his name? Simone would be hung up in women's underwear if Jill had it her way. But that was just her version.
That's not Simone's thing.
That's just a Kirkendall's version of killer boots, man.
New boot goofing, bro. Oh!
Oh, genuine ostrich. Three payments.
Three payments.
They go to the sex shop, and it's the person running the counter is a real bitch.
Yeah, she comes in feisty for no reason.
She's like, a real bitch and a half. They ask her some pretty direct questions, and she's like, do I have to answer? And when they're like, we got somebody who bought some fetish, some restraints here, we're hoping to get some information. She's like, we're going to have to be more specific. We sell a lot of restraints. So then they're incredibly specific, and she pulls out what she thinks it is. And
then, she says, she's like, oh, those are the Beastmasters.
So she mentions, like, yeah, he's come in a couple times buying some dominatrix shit. And he comes in with a woman, and she describes Jerry, and they're like, shit. And she then says, yeah, she's always bought dominatrix gear and some pretty ballsy lingerie for a woman of her proportion. And then as the detectives leave, she says, I think her name was Jerry.
Yeah, everyone, like, doesn't know if her name is, like, really Jerry. They just think.
And it was also, like, this...
Nobly.
Another thing...
Old ladies are the same thing. Everything.
And this sex shop worker, she said something else that was annoying, where she's like, what happened? And they said, well, it's a homicide is a felony, so if you don't want to cooperate with us, that would be a felony, too. And then she's like, what happened? Did she die? And he's like, no, he's the one that's no longer with us. And she's like, she said, like, oops or uh-oh in a way that was like, hey, bitch, like, do people die all the time around you?
Yeah. But not only that, it feels like she was more bummed that he died instead of her. Like, she would rather her be dead.
Yeah, it's,
than him.
She was a horrible person.
Well, maybe because she was, like, tall and blonde, this woman.
Uh-huh.
And then later on, when we learned that, like, Jerry doesn't really like talking to pretty girls, maybe Jerry was just rude to her. And so that's why this girl's being kind of, like, mean about it.
Yeah. I mean, that makes uh-huh. that makes some sense. They bring all this information to Fancy, who is like, shit. He's, like, not happy with what this could mean. And they bring her down to talk about it. And she's just so annoying from the first second, where they tell her what they know, and then they're like, so we gotta know, are you the one that put him up there? And she's like, why would you ask me that? She's like, because we want to know the answer. That's why you ask questions. She keeps saying, like, oh, you guys are having a good time. And
yeah, well, she doesn't like them, and she doesn't want to talk about this embarrassing thing that's going on, because she doesn't feel comfortable with them. Like, I get that part, but you're right. She is being, like, she could just easily say, like, hey, I'm not going to say anything.
And
unless I can talk to Andy Sipwitz.
Yeah, she also says a phrase that I'm going to start using in my regular life. Shut your pretty girl hole.
Shut your pretty girl hole up.
Yeah, she said that a couple times, which is funny. And,
yeah.
And then she says, I want to talk to Andy Sipwitz or I'm going to lawyer up.
Lawyer up. You better lawyer up.
This, at this point, they talk to Fancy and he's like, what? I don't understand. And they're like, well, she doesn't want to talk to us. She feels like we're lording, that we think she's a geek and we're lording being pretty over her. And she wants to talk to Andy Sipwitz. And then Fancy says, she thinks Andy figures her for Michelle Pfeiffer. Also kind of mean. And then Fancy goes to ask Andy, and it's pretty hilarious, and I wrote down a lot of quotes from that scene. But Fancy says, like, look, this is going to be an uncomfortable conversation, but we got to have it. And then doesn't let Simone leave, and tells her...
Yeah, Simone wants to go do something, and he goes, no, you stay right here.
And he says, Jerry wants to talk to you about what happened, and the way Sipowicz was like, I'm not going to do that. It was just so funny. And he says, look, if you don't talk to her, she's going to lawyer up. And he says, get her a lawyer then. We don't do that often enough. And then Sipowicz goes crazy, and I just wrote almost everything he said. She's going to wind up throwing a rubber garden animal at me. Or wants both of us perched upside down beside each other like bats.
I don't know. Like, he's so dramatic, dude.
And then he sees that Simone is laughing, and he says, oh, you see, this amuses you. Because you don't attract psychotics.
But he does, though, because he attracted that one crazy lady.
It's true. And then And then he kind of, like, slowly says okay, and he says, has she been strip-searched? And he's like, oh, she doesn't have any weapons. He's like, I'm not talking about weapons. She may have rubber toads, or I don't know what I'm talking about. And then just, like, kind of walks off.
Well, it's an awkward situation for him, so he's a little flustered.
And his interview with Jerry is super interesting, because he walks in super mean. She said, I always figured you for a person that took people as they are.
Yeah, she's giving him nothing but compliments.
And he said, so what happened? And she's like, well, my friend died. And he's like, did you hang him up? Because that's a legal no-no. She says, no, he likes to be bound and hung up. It helps him get off. It helps him finish. And he says, he must have had a real launch today.
Just joking about a dead man's orgasm.
And she said, he's like, well, did you put him up there? And she said, no, I was in the bathroom. And he's like, does he toss himself up like a horseshoe until he gets hooked on? Then she's like, no, I was in the bathroom. And he said, did you have your rubber jumpsuit on? Must take you a while to do your business. And
Jesus, man.
He goes so hard on her. And then she says, no, I met him recently. We went to high school together, and I always thought he had a crush on me. And then I met him again in New York this Easter, and says, at one of those crucifixion pageants?
Yeah, what does that mean?
He's just being a dick.
Does he mean, like, Catholic Mass?
She says, no, I was crying in the bathroom because he has lost interest in her over time. He started seeing other people to dominate him. And she basically breaks down and explains what happened and why she started hitting on Sipowicz, saying that he's clearly not into her anymore, and it started to get insulting how he doesn't even want her involved.
In the process, yeah.
And Sipowicz ends, like, realizing, okay, this person's obviously in a terrible place, this isn't cool what's happening to him, and he tells her what to say to get the best outcome from the DA. But then he also leaves.
I still
leaves
don't understand
it.
Why she has to say anything if she didn't put him up there.
It's gonna look like she did regardless, and there's no witness to say otherwise. I think that's the problem. It's an issue of there's a reasonable doubt that she did this, but the less she says about a motive, the more likely she has of beating the case, I guess, or proving her innocence. If she just says, like, look, this is the stuff he liked to do. He got himself up there while I was in the bathroom, and I didn't come out right away. I don't know what she's going to say about how it took her so long. I mean, he put himself up there. I had to take a wicked shit. It took forever to clean up. Like, I don't really know what
yeah,
she's going
to... I had to, like, take a shower to clean off, you know?
Like, I don't know what she's going to say, but he says, don't bring up the fact that he was losing interest, because that'll sound like motive.
Well, that's good. That was a good point.
What's really cool, what I think is cool about this episode, at least in relation to both stories, is it's Sipowicz realizing that things aren't always what they seem. Like, one of the guys was a good dude, and he ended up dying for no good reason. And Jerry isn't just a crazy person. She was lonely and pushed to a pretty bad limit and went to a bad place. So, it was pretty cool for Sipowicz. He also did two things that I thought were hilarious in this episode that I want to mention. He fucks up the names of two things and gets corrected. When he's talking to Bluestone, he says, yeah, with Forever Young. And he's like, none forgotten. He's like, whatever. And then later...
Forever Young's the song, right?
Yeah. And then later...
Forever Young!
Later, when he's talking to Ray, he says, Madam Sunflower Seed. And Metavoy's like, Sister Sunray. Also in this episode, Martinez quickly mentions, like, oh, I'm going to go pick up Gina, who got her face stitches removed.
Yeah, because she's supposed to be coming back soon, right?
Yeah, and then he goes to see her in the middle of the episode, and it's awkward because the scene is so short and so quick that, like, it almost doesn't even need to be there, where...
And she's awkward. She's an awkward actress.
Because he shows up at the doctor's office, and the doctor's like, okay, so he's like, just be calm, don't pretend like they're not there, but just act natural. And he does, and she's the only one that's, like, awkward about it. And then Martinez is just like, so can we go?
Yeah, right.
Like it's not a whole lot gets accomplished by that scene except to let us know that she's insecure about the scars, which we already could have guessed, especially from the last
scene. It felt like Martinez was asking the director of that episode, like, hey, can we go now? Like, are we good?
Can we move on? This scene's over. The end of the episode, before we finish up that story, Russell kind of sinks her claws into Bobby in front of Kirkendall.
Because, oh, yeah.
Because
how awkward was that?
Yeah, because Russell's like, well, what are you doing tonight? He's like, I got a clear schedule. He's like, and after that? He's like, well, one day at a time. And then Kirkendall walks by like, okay, well, I guess he's going to be...
I guess that rain check is a tornado check then.
Like, it's... I guess this is over. The episode ends proving a very important thing about Martinez. Martinez can't be natural in a love scene at all. It's always weird and awkward. The first one was with Lesniak, where it seemed like two 14-year-olds trying to figure out how sex works.
Those two weirdos, man.
And then in this one, he's talking with Gina, and he's like, yeah, I mean, I could live a life of leisure. I'm digging this. And she's like, my roommate's not coming back. She was upset about my scars. And she's like, well, she's crazy. And she's like, yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do. I got savings.
Would that make or break you living with somebody?
No.
Right? I feel like that is a weird, like, story point to put in.
That her roommate was like, yeah, I can't deal with this. You have face scars.
Ugh.
What am I going to do? Well, it's also...
like, why couldn't they have moved in together based off of, like, they wanted to be with each other, you know?
Yeah.
Like, not out of necessity.
It was awkward. It's also awkward that he's like, look, if you want me to stay tonight, and she's like, oh, well, that's kind of you. He's like, I can get up on the loft, and he's like, but I might hit my head. And she's like, yeah, also, I'm scared of heights. And it was like, okay, you guys just want a bone. So why? Like, this dance is not good enough. You know what I mean?
Just pull the mattress to the floor.
Like, it was like, we get it, you guys are gonna bone, just fucking get it over with. It's also annoying that the way it happens, he's like, you don't gotta fib, we can both sleep in there. I was like, that was smooth. And and then...
It's like talking to like a 4-year-old, you don't gotta fib.
But Martinez and her, like, I haven't been in this situation very often, but have you ever had your first kiss right before you were obviously gonna bone someone? Because I think that's their first kiss on screen.
I think you're right.
So it was, hey, we're going to go bone, first kiss.
No, didn't they go out on a date before she got cut?
I think they went out together, but it wasn't clear that they were, like, a thing. It was just he was concerned. I don't know. He was into her, but I don't think they...
Yeah, I don't remember.
They established that they were, like, kissing and whatnot. But it seemed like, hey, she's back. Oh, we got the stitches out. Oh, man. We like each other. Hey, let's bone. Like, it seemed like they jumped.
Oh, 100%. It was very unnatural. The whole thing was very awkward.
With that said, is there anything about this episode you would like to talk about?
No.
I would say there's a lot of fat shaming in this episode, because even...
Yeah, there is. There's a ton of fat shaming.
Sipowicz even makes jokes about Sister Sun Ray, where he calls her a blimp, and then says, yeah, this guy's got credibility if he can fit in a room with her.
Oh, my God.
And I was like...
Sipowicz can't make fat jokes. Like, he looks like a butterball turkey. Like, he needs to chill.
Because we were talking about Endgame a little bit earlier. People were worried about how they thought Thor was fat-shamed. I was like, fucking watch some 90s television before you...
Oh, 100%. That was, like, everyone's go-to joke.
Get on the fat-shame train. Like...
Yeah.
I didn't think it was that bad what they did to Thor, and it was mostly for jokes, and was in line with his character.
And he was depressed, and it was, like, the total opposite of what he normally was, you know? Normally he is a, normally he's, like, you know, in shape and, like, the strongest and looks the best, and he's not right now. He's, like, because he's going through shit. It happens.
This episode, I mean, the secondary title could have been fat shaming, and it probably would work out just as fine.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com, iTunes, and Stitcher. We are on Twitter at AsherBrosPod, Instagram AsherBrothersPodcast, where we mostly just announce when new episodes of the show are coming out. Thanks for listening, and keep watching NYPD Blue. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you need more NYPD Blue info in your life, you could always check out True Blue, a book written about the first couple seasons by some of the creators and consultants. You can check out an unofficial guide to NYPD Blue by Gene Kendall for 99 cents on Amazon. It goes through every season of the show, kind of like how we're doing, but in book form. You could always check out What Would Sipowicz Do?, a collection of articles written about the show. Every episode of NYPD Blue is currently on Hulu and Amazon, those streaming services. You could watch every single episode there. A couple of corrections from the last episode, Upstairs, Downstairs. We forgot to mention Famous Faces. Mike Zorzi was played by John Ventimiglia. I'm going to mess up that name. Who was on The Sopranos. Also, the guy who played Baumgartner was a famous face, Matt Landers, from other Bochco productions, L.A. Law and Hill Street Blues. That correction courtesy of Chris, who is blanking stuff on Twitter. Thanks to him, and thanks to you for listening.